from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in July 1999 with the first ever National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo. Just 21 people took part in the inaugural event. NaNoWriMo is now every November, and several hundred thousand people are trying to write a 50,000-word story this month. So we wanted to convene a panel to focus on writing. Why write? What does get published, especially when it comes to fiction? What sells and what doesn't? What are publishers looking for? How can aspiring writers get noticed? And frankly, do some writers write more for them than their audience? Can you force creativity? My guest for the hour, and I love this panel because we can take it in so many different directions, we have Eric Wilder here, who is the author of I, Humpty, The Grim Report Online, and it's great to see you in person because I see you every day on Twitter, so it's nice to have you about 5 feet away from me.
Well, it's good to be here.
Thanks for being here. Gregory Gerard is here, an author and a teacher at Writers and Books, who's written fiction, narrative nonfiction, and it seems like just about every genre, Greg.
Yeah. I like to explore everything.
Very good. Well, we're going to talk about some of your work as well coming up. And Sandra Beckwith is here of Build Book Buzz. And Sandra, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
I write nonfiction, and so I admire the fiction writers in the room here because that takes creativity, where all I do really is report. But I also teach authors how to market their books, and I find that really enjoyable. And I know we're going to touch on this, but you talked about this idea of writing for just yourself. What I find is that a lot of authors do that, and then they have a book and they say, well, maybe I can sell this. And that's when they start thinking about the marketing process, which you probably know is too late.
I imagine that may be the case, but you know, we'll talk about some, kind of what publishers, how the process maybe has changed, and what sells and what doesn't. And let me start with Greg, Greg, when you teach at Writers and Books, when you work with writers, how often does the question come up? You know, I love doing this. How do I get published?
It's usually the first question on a student's lips, because they, you know, you see the Stephen Kings and everybody out there that's fabulously famous, and they approach the classroom thinking, you know, when is my turn? So the very first conversation I have with the students before we start any of the lessons is recognize a couple of things. Number one, you are a writer because you write. So everybody sitting in the room is a writer because everybody has to turn in a writing sample at that point.
You don't have to get published to be a writer.
That's correct. Yeah. And then number two, I try to reset expectations that the Stephen Kings and the people who really make it hugely big are a minuscule percentage of 1% of all of the writers in the world. So if you can lower those expectations, you can potentially free yourself up to enjoy what you're doing and potentially become more creative as a result.
Eric, you met Greg at Writers and Books?
Yeah. It was about 2 years ago. It was actually 2 years ago and a week ago, 2 years and a week ago. He gave me an assignment that led to what I was doing now, which is running the Grim Report, and that was the catalyst for the book that I wrote, I, Humpty. But it was about 2 years ago that I took a class of his. I was just advertising at the time. I wanted to beef up my skill set. I wanted to incorporate writing into what I do because it's a lot of art direction, and so I took a creative writing class there.
Okay, and this being NaNoWriMo, Writers and Books has a number of events. In fact, Writers and Books has all kinds of different classes and cool things. Greg,
they do. Their catalog is huge, and it expands as time goes on. I started there as a student and became a teacher there over the years. But they're open to so many different, anything from a Halloween party where, you know, you celebrate Edgar Allan Poe to a creative writing course to writing for poetry or healing. They'll delve into any genre. Screenwriting, I took a course in that there. So it's a wonderful resource for the Rochester community, I'll say that.
And when you mentioned Grim Report, for the audience who doesn't know you, Eric is at Grim Report on Twitter, but what is it?
It's a satirical news blog where all the articles, they're set, you know, in modern day society, but the main subjects are fairy tales and nursery rhymes. Elements from those types of stories are brought into these satirical news articles.
And the work that you started kind of there and through various processes became I Humpty. Tell us about the book.
Well, the book, as I was writing articles, you know, a lot of it took place late at night. At the time, I had a newborn. And so a lot of these articles that I wrote were just in, you know, short amount of time.
Congratulations for writing at all with a newborn.
Yes. Well, and a lot of it was like at 4 o'clock in the morning when I was feeding or anything like that. So a lot of these were, you know, oh, this is a great idea. And, you know, I'd like to expand upon it. But, you want to also be able to keep moving and keep writing. So it's like I've got a post because I've got, you know, this is the time to post. And, you know, I've got to start another story tomorrow. And with, excuse me, I Humpty, you know, I was able to, I after a while, I was like, you know, I can put this all in a book and I can expand upon that and you know, publish a book with that. So what this book let me do was then, you know, take all the stuff that I'd written and distill it and then expand upon and publish.
Okay. And what was there an end goal with your first book, Eric? I mean, is there, again, because Greg's talking about, and Sandra has cautioned about, you know, the realistic expectations. Did
right.
you have either expectations or a goal in this?
I mean, you know, publishing was the number one goal. And because, like you said, you know, it's tough to write with a little one. It's tough to write. I have, you know, another job. And just to be able to manage, you know, the writing and all that stuff and still publish, you know, is a feat unto itself. So that was the first step. And of course, just, you know, just to make the best quality book that I can.
Publishing, by the way, means different things to different people. I mean, for some people, they want to see a tangible copy of something in their hands, and that is good enough, that somebody bound it for me and this is done. I did this.
Yeah,
others who will say publishing means it's got to be done by, you know, a licensed publisher, et cetera. So for you, was there any distinction there?
I had toyed with the notion of finding a traditional publisher. But the whole process was just so, you know, so organically grown that, you know, I work in advertising, I work in design. So it was sort of, you know, I just start talking to people about covers. I start talking to people about, you know, if I were put this together, you know, what would illustrations look like? And it just sort of, you know, gathered steam until you find yourself actually, you know, laying it out and producing it yourself.
Right.
And so the whole, you know, momentum of it just led me to self-publish.
Now, Eric, not all of our listening audience who are aspiring writers are in design. So, it sounds like you certainly had a lot of skills that would help get the book done.
Right.
What's the goal now going forward for you as a writer?
Well, this thing is, you know, it's segmented into, you know, hundreds of articles. I'd like to be able to sit down and, you know, write a complete story. And once that's done, you know, then I would probably seek out a publisher at that point because, you know, it just sort of, again, this was, it was sort of part of a process. You're talking to all these people. And with the Grimm Report, I'd spoken to a lot of writers. I had a lot of writers write for it. I had people doing illustrations for it. People just started submitting on their own after about the first year.
I mean, you hit 10,000 subscribers?
Yes.
I mean, did you ever think when you started the Grimm Report you'd have 10,000 subscribers?
No. I mean, I just, you know, this is just a,
it's pretty great.
You know, just post was sort of, you know, my
yeah,
mantra.
Just
at
get
that
something
point. Just,
posted. Right.
Right. You know, and you start to bring in other things. You start to, it was probably 3 or 4 months before I even hit Twitter after I was posting that I started looking at social media. It was part of the, it's just a function of, I was using WordPress at the time to build the site. And it said, do you want to publicize to such, you know, Twitter and Facebook and whatnot? I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, well, I better start an account if I'm going to do that. And then, you know, you get on there. First, I just made the accounts. I publish. It would go out there into the ether, you know. And then I'm like, well, who am I sending this to? What am I, you know, who's looking? I have a Twitter account. What's that all about? I mean, so I go on there. I see how it's displayed on there. I start to, you know, other people start to respond to it. Other writers with ideas, other, you know, just readers who like, you know, fairy tales and the such. And it just, you know, sort of builds into this, you know,
thing.
Yes.
It's a thing.
Yes, yes.
It's a thing now.
Continuum of, yeah, so.
But will you, if you find yourself with the time and to write a book that you'd like to see, you know, published more broadly for the next one, will you spend a lot of time thinking about what works, what sells, what people want, or will you sit down and say, this is the book I have in me and this is the book I'm going to write?
I probably say, this is the book I have in me, this is the book I'm going to write. How can I best use what I have to reach, you know, the audience that I'd like to find for that book? And again, it's not all just people who are, you know, checking out to read what's on there for the day. Again, a lot of people are, you know, writers, illustrators, and it's sort of like you're writing for yourself. You get feedback from these other people in the industry. If there are a lot of industry people out there that are reading what you write, you know, why not you write the story you want to write, you know, this complete story, and then take it to those people and, you know, see what channels and outlets you can use to.
All right, we're about to find out if Build Book Buzz and Sandra Beckwith think that's a good approach. What do you think, Sandra?
I love it. What I love is that you said you've got 10,000 subscribers. And that's fantastic, and that's...
They already want you, see?
They are people who are self-identified as being interested in what you have to say and what you have to share. So you've got what, you know, we in the publishing business call a platform, which is kind of a stupid word for built-in audience. That's what you've got. One question I would have is if you take, and you're talking about writing a book that's a story instead of a collection of shorter stories or essays or whatever, is it going to be following that similar theme that you've got in I, Humpty? And by asking that, what I'm really saying is, will it appeal to the same audience, or are you going to go in a different direction? Because that's a sort of a key point.
You know, as of right now, it would sort of, it would be in this same theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably a different way to tell. I don't want to say too much, but probably a different way to tell the stories that I have here. But you know, I'm not gonna say, you know, this is romance novel that, you know, I really have in me that I need to get out, and I'm gonna
people
go to these
do
people.
That.
Who are, I mean, people, and that's cool, but you know, that's not where my mind is right now. That's not where I am creatively. So I've been doing this for 2 years. So.
Are you thinking like 51 Shades of Grey, something like that?
Right, you know. Right.
No, I mean, Sandra, it sounds like this is someone who wants to be pragmatic about what can work without sacrificing really what they desire to write.
Exactly. And you said it so well when you talked about there are some people just say, you know, this is the book I have in me, and just getting it printed and, you know, having a couple of copies to pass out to the family at Thanksgiving is really all they need. But then sometimes those people, you know, then they have that, well, would somebody else buy that? You're past that question. You know somebody else will buy it. You've got a following, and I think that's great. Very exciting.
Before I get to what Greg has already written, I'm curious to know, Greg, about your own approach to sometimes splitting that difference and writing. Are you writing what you want to write in your heart and as a writer, or are you writing again pragmatically, thinking, well, it'd be great if we could sell 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 of these things?
I came at it like one of those students I was describing. I had a friend who had a really fantastic opportunity and got published because she's a fantastic writer. So I had stars in my eyes when I approached it, but I also had a very core idea. I grew up gay and Catholic in Rochester and went to McQuaid in the 80s and had this struggle, a profound struggle that was a very quiet and private struggle. And I had a great desire to share that with, you know, in a story format with other people who might be struggling. So that was the driving force behind it. So the very first thing I tell students after I tell them about don't, you know, think you're going to be on the bestseller list tomorrow is to the first rule of writing, write what you know. So when you were asking Eric about what he should write, you know, my gut immediately goes to what is the story that is within you? I think that's the way you're going to succeed, because you need that creative drive and energy behind the writing. You can't just want to make a million and continue that over a period of years. It's not self-sustaining in the same way that something that you really care about is.
The book, by the way, the memoir from 2009 is In Jupiter's Shadow. And I would love to have you back just to talk about In Jupiter's Shadow sometime, because I think it's a fabulous idea. And Sandra Beckwith, when you hear growing up gay and Catholic in the 1980s, going to McQuaid, I'm instantly interested in some of the conflict and some of the, you know, all the various layers there.
I am too, and I'm neither. So, I'm intrigued by that. I think that's really interesting. And the difference, though, between I think you and Eric is that Eric is telling a story that is just plain fun. You know, he's got a sort of a twist on today's news using fairy tale characters. I mean, fun. And
he's got a great satirical sense of humor.
And satire. But you've got a message that you want to share with people. You know, there's probably an underlying message to the whole idea of gay and Catholic. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it might be a message of tolerance or something like that. So your motivation probably with your nonfiction is to help others so that they don't suffer or struggle the same way that you did, I would imagine. And that is one thing that motivates so many authors, is they've got this experience or life experiences,
yes,
and a message that they want to share with others to help them. It's not just to tell their personal story. It's that they learned something in this process, and they're hoping that what they learned will save somebody else trouble or pain. And it's a great motivating factor. And those authors are some that really do the best, because they are really on a mission to get their message out there and to help people. And, you know, I find that so many authors are so shy about talking about their books or themselves. They feel like they're shameless self-promoters. And I always just suggest to them to sort of take yourself out of it and focus on the good that you can do by sharing information about your book. Because when you get the word out about your book, you have the potential to change lives. So focus less on, oh gosh, I don't want to be on Evan's show, I'm uncomfortable talking about myself.
I'm amazed when people say no. But yeah.
But the way to reframe it is, wow, what a great opportunity for me to help people who are listening to that show. Yes, I will do that.
Well, and Greg, we're not here to analyze every book scan or sales number, but Greg's book has outsold Governor Cuomo's book. So, you know.
I didn't know that, but okay.
You didn't
nice.
Know that? Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's a nice feather in your cap. Are you somebody, though, when you went through that process of In Jupiter's Shadow, did you find yourself really wanting to get to a certain number? Did it matter to you, Greg?
The sales, again, I still had those stars in my eyes for a long time, so that was a hard concept to let go. But that having been said, it took about 5 years ultimately to write the book. Some things that just are occurring to me as you were asking questions, what motivates you, how often do you write, and what keeps you going along?
Yeah.
One thing for me that was highly successful was to join a writing group. I had taken a writing class at Writers and Books, and some of the students from the class went out then, and we got together, four of us, and decided to meet once a month and review each other's work. And that type of a deadline is absolutely what I needed in my life to motivate me to, you know, I have that responsibility to myself, which I can let go, but when I have a responsibility to other people, that I have to be in that cafe, you know, on the first Saturday with something in hand for people to review.
You can't show up with nothing.
Exactly. Well, I didn't want to, because I didn't want to lose that opportunity.
Absolutely. But Greg, that also brings up another interesting point, because Greg, we've talked about his memoir. You wrote fiction with the Martini Chronicles, which we'll get to in a minute. But what you're talking about is a motivating kind of a deadline. And I'm a creature of deadline. I get that. At the same time, I look at NaNoWriMo, and they're trying to do, is it 50,000 words as a baseline in a month? Is that right? Something like that?
I thought it was 70, but is it 50?
I believe it's 50.
All right.
Maybe the bar has been lowered. I don't know what it is, but it's something like 50,000 or 70,000 words in a month. And my question, first of all, Greg, is can you force creativity? You know, is there a danger to putting too much of a quota for a writer?
It's a good question, and I have two thoughts about it. Number one, yes. When I bring students together for our weekly writing assignments in class, they come into class and they get an assignment they have to write. And in a way, I force them. I mean, I try to make it fun and interesting so that it's, you know, that alone can motivate. But just getting something down on paper, even if it's a really lousy first draft of something, having that on paper, you can go back there later or on your computer, wherever you do, and then reworking it is so much easier than staring at a blank page and not knowing where to start. So, you know, I tell every one of my students, don't throw away all the scraps and the notebook that you carry out of this class, you know, 8 weeks from now, because sometime down the road, you can pull that out and, oh my gosh, it could turn into the Grimm Report.
I still have all my assignments from this
Do you really?
Yeah, I took a couple of classes. Yes, I still have all, just in case. You never know. There could be that inspiration there that...
But did you ever, as a student, say, I can't do 2,000 words right now. Did you ever find yourself in that spot?
You can, you know, just try your darndest. I mean, yes. Where it's just you're not going to get to, you know, X amount of words, but it is better to put something down than nothing down.
And this gets to an interesting, another interesting point because, especially with the modern distractions. I find if I ever want to write, it's good. Poor Greg's microphone. I'll fix that during the break. You're going to give yourself sciatica or whatever the curved spine thing is.
But scoliosis.
That's scoliosis. Yes, see you. Thank you. I find that I almost have to be on a computer that does not have internet and keep my cell phone away from me because it is so easy to say, oh, I haven't. You know, David Rakoff used to say, I haven't checked my email in 46 seconds. You know, I wonder if, and then all of a sudden you're going nowhere, right, Greg?
What works for me, I agree. What works for me is putting on some music that I really like, the Indigo Girls or something, where I know it really well, so it's not going to distract me, but it takes away that buzz of wanting to check my email. It kind of occupies the background, and it frees up the foreground to start writing and having fun with it and staying there for 2 hours.
I'm with you on that. I would put on a whole Greg Laswell album just for background noise, so I'm not trying to be too distracted. What about you, Eric? I mean, you've got enough distractions in your life.
Yeah. You know, if I want to be completely without distraction, I do have a notebook that I keep in my desk that the kids can't touch, so they can't be drawing little pictures all over. And then I can draw pictures all over. Right. Nobody has to worry about it. But you know, it's I don't always have the luxury of just sitting there with my laptop. You know, I do have other work. I do have little kids. There has been times where I've, you know, been sitting in my bed and writing on my phone. There have been times where I've been sitting there with my son and dictating into my phone. And then, you know, as soon as he's down for a nap, go back. Because these posts, you know, they can run 250, 500 words, something like that. And just get the essence of the idea down. And the first time's always just, you know, terrible. And I think it's brilliant at the time. I'm like, this is hilarious. And I'll read it to my wife, and she's like, you know, what are you thinking? You can't do that. You can't post it for people to you know. So, but yeah, and go back, you know, clean it up. But as long as you get it down, sometimes I'll put some on my phone, some on a piece of paper, and I'll just have to put it all together later. It's just, you know, find the time.
The inspiring thing about this panel, and for any of our listeners who have ever thought, I'd love to write a book, or I'd love to finish a book, or I'd love to maybe even eventually try to get published, which again, we're going to talk more about in our second half hour, you're hearing a little bit of a no excuses mentality. And that doesn't mean you have to write every single day or every single hour. But the notion that says, well, I can only write when something really strikes me.
Right.
You know, two things. Eric and Greg are certainly showing you that you can try to force and squeeze it out, and then eventually you go back and you say, that was awful, but there's something here of value, and you can start cleaning it up. And then, Eric, you're not going to let an opportunity go away if you're holding a child or whatever. I mean, if you get a great idea, how many times have we ever been driving home thinking of a great idea, and by the time I pull into the driveway, it's gone?
Right.
You know,
right.
It sounds like you're finding ways to capture those.
Yeah. If that happened to me, I'd probably pull over and grab my phone and say, at least make a note, and then, you know, back on with the drive.
You ever done that, Greg?
All the time. Siri is my best friend.
I love that. Well, let's take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the actual publication process. And again, it means different things for different people. But, you know, the question of what the process actually is in terms of making contact with the publisher? Do you need an agent? What happens, how do you build book buzz? And what are publishers looking for? What sells and what doesn't? All of that explored in our second half hour with this great panel right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, we go inside the budget process for Monroe County with the question of how the $1 billion-plus budget gets done. The Maggie Brooks administration just released the plans for 2015, and now legislators have until early December to decide if they want to tweak it. We ask why they so rarely tweak it, and what comes next? It's all Tuesday on Connections.
Which book adventures do you want to go on?
For some teachers, motivating students is like being on stage.
And you look at these faculty members and you watch them, oh boy, their performance. I mean, you have to be. And our failure to recognize that is a problem.
Teaching as Performance, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 o'clock on your public radio station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It's National Novel Writing Month, and that's just kind of the opening, the seed that was planted for our discussion about writing novels, getting published, the process, and what you want to get out of it if you're a writer. Do you want to be widely published, or do you want to write simply because you feel you've got a story to tell and you want to get the story out of you and sort of publishing be darned. So it's a really interesting panel with very diverse backgrounds and views. Eric Wilder is the author of I, Humpty and The Grimm Report, at Grimm Report on Twitter. Gregory Gerard is an author of a memoir and fiction and narrative nonfiction coming along. And he's also taught and teaches at Writers and Books in Rochester. Sandra Beckwith is with Build Book Buzz. And Sandra, when it comes to publishing, how much have things changed in 5, 10, 20 years?
It's huge. My first book was traditionally published in 1995, and I had an agent, went, you know, that whole traditional process. Now I would be really hard-pressed to be able to get a traditional book publishing contract because for the type of work I do now, the audience is too small for most traditional publishers, with maybe a couple of exceptions. And, you know, I'm active in a lot of online writers groups. I moderate a couple groups on Facebook, and I contribute to some on LinkedIn. And one of the most common things I see from authors is they say, you know, I'm going to write a book. Should I go the traditional route, or should I self-publish? And I hate to be, you know, the Debbie Downer of the online world, but I usually have to say to them, it might not be up to you. You might not have a choice. It is so hard to get a traditional publishing contract that you might just have to self-publish.
But self-publishing is not a pejorative.
It is not a bad thing. It is not a bad thing. And especially for Eric. Eric has this fan base. He's got that platform that we talked about already, so he can sell directly to his target audience, which is really key. You have to know your target audience, and he's got that figured out. And then Eric can make the money without a middleman taking anything out of it. The downside, of course, for that is if you have a traditional contract, you typically, but not always anymore, but you typically get an advance up front to write the book, which makes it more attractive when this is your day job, as it is for me, versus somebody who's got a full-time paycheck that's coming from somewhere else. And if you've got a traditional publishing contract, you spend nothing to get the book manufactured, which is really what publishers do. They don't market books. They manufacture books. So you might get paid up front, and it won't cost you anything to get the book out there. Plus, traditional publishers will get you bookstore distribution. But again, we all know there are fewer and fewer bookstores out there. You know, what have we got here? Barnes & Noble, and I think there's still Liftbridge Books in Brockport.
Does great stuff, yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you might as well be buying your books at BJ's or Sam's Club,
yeah.
You know? So there are fewer places where your book will be distributed, and publishers are not real good at getting your book into non-traditional retail outlets. And that's where authors who self-publish can do a better job themselves. They can get their books. If your book is on hairstyles of the 80s, you might be able to get your book into a chain of hair salons, you know, those unconventional retail outlets where your target audience is hanging out and might actually buy your book.
All right. So before we even get to, again, that doesn't mean that you can't dream of a bigger publisher.
You can do it,
but,
for sure.
And we're going to get there in a second, but let's talk a little bit about self-publishing. And what are the platforms? Where do you start? I want to go around the room and start with Sandra on that.
Well, you know, there are different options, actually. You can go traditionally by yourself, where you do everything yourself. You can find an indie publisher where it's more of a partnership, where it doesn't cost you anything to get the book produced, but you don't get an advance, and they take a percentage of the sales. So there's that option. You can go a different kind of a model where you have a publishing company that you work with, but you pay them a lot of money to get the book out there, but then the book is yours. And then there's that, you know, more conventional model that we just talked about. So that there are so many options. The one you pick should depend in part on the resources you have available. Eric talked about how he knew people in design, so he had some options there. So going completely solo probably made sense for you, Eric. For other people, they have more money than time, so paying somebody to do the whole kind of publishing process, cover design, interior, all of that might make more sense for them. There are a lot more options than there ever were, and which one you select is a real individual choice.
Let me turn it over to Greg Girard, because the Martini Chronicles is a very interesting project that you've chosen to go. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about what the Martini Chronicles, a work of fiction, is all about. And
sure.
That microphone is not going to stay up. It's just not going to happen. But that's all right.
I will manage.
That's
thank
all right.
You.
Well, send us the medical bill. The Martini Chronicles is all about what?
It's celebrating the friendship that I've discovered between gay men and married women. I think it's underreported and under-celebrated in this world. So I wrote a fictional story about a guy and a woman who get together once a week at their favorite bar, the Martini Chronicles. My husband happens to be especially adept at creating martinis. So he taught me everything I know about mixing up special recipes. So I decided to create a book that was serial in nature, where I could write a chapter, have it feature these two people, but I would also include a martini recipe themed around the particular conversation they were having in that chapter.
All right, so your husband's recipes are in there?
Taught me, and I've kind of tweaked. So I'll give him some.
Oh, I see.
I'm giving him his props.
You're claiming credit, even though you're still your husband's yeah. recipes. Okay. And tell me about the publishing route that you chose to pursue with the Martini Chronicles.
For Martini Chronicles, I chose to go. Right now, I'm just testing the waters on Kindle. And my motivation there was basically from a story I heard on All Things Considered with his name is Hugh Howey, I think, who wrote a book called Wool that, kind of like me, he had written a one chapter, a serialized type story, and he threw it out on Kindle just to have it have an audience. And it grew and grew, and he said the money came in a trickle, and then a stream, and then a flood, and then he quit his day job. And he was able to price it in a way that was very inexpensive and got a following, kind of what you were talking about, Sandra. So I wanted to test that out and see how that would work. So that's what I'm doing with the Martini Chronicles.
And what do you think so far?
So far, it's less than a trickle. And so it goes back to, how do you get your book noticed? How do you find creative ways to make that happen? Eric and I teamed up with the Bomba Bistro, and we did a monthly reading night. They wanted to do a writer's night where we came and I read from the Martini Chronicles, and he read from the Grimm Report. And they featured the martini at the bar that night that was from that chapter. So there's so many different creative ways you can make that happen. That's just one drop in the bucket of the creative ideas that I come up with to try to make people notice without wearing out your friends.
A couple of questions have come in online, and I've neglected mentioning to our listeners, if you want to join the conversation or if you have questions about writing, publishing, etc., it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It's toll-free. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Steve writes to us, a friend wrote a book and wants to get information about how to get it sold on Amazon. Can you give me any information? Does not mention if it's been published. I assume it's self-published. So, Sandra, we need to know a lot more about that first, but can you get a book on Amazon?
Yeah, two words, the Google. Just Google how to get a book on Amazon. You'll get plenty of information. There's so much out there. And yes, you can write a book and get it up on Amazon. You can get it up in ebook form for Kindle, or if you've got a printed version, you can also make it available for purchase on Amazon. Not a hard process. Just Google it, and you'll get a page on Amazon that'll walk you through it.
Sandra will probably also remind you, though, considering her work is Build Book Buzz, that just because you put it on Amazon doesn't mean it's going to be found or
so
sold.
So true. It's one of those, people think, you know, if you build it, they will come. Not even close. Yeah, you really need to work to let people know that it's up there on Amazon and get them to that page to buy.
And Mason wants to know, how do you find a writer's group to join? I mean, apart from just making one of your own and sort of setting your own rules and having fun with it, both Greg and Eric have talked about the value of writer's groups. Eric, would you Mason just wants to know about joining a writer's group.
I mean, I was part of a writer's group that we sort of bonded together through Writers and Books. I don't know if he's local or not, but, schools, local writing institutions, anything like that, you'll find people posting up information all the time or looking for stuff. But, yeah, go online and, you know, go to, Twitter. And I know people who have created their own sort of little groups of writers that they had common interests, and they wanted to help each other write, help each other promote their material, and sort of shoulder the burden of all that. There are people like him looking for the same thing all the time. So.
Absolutely. Greg?
I have something I would add to Mason, and that is go to your favorite cafe in town where you like to hang out and put up a note on the board and see who responds.
Yeah. Also, go to meetup.com. You can probably put in the zip code, and you probably will find groups of other people who are doing it. And stop in. If there's a Barnes & Noble near you, stop in there and ask there, because I think a lot of writers' groups actually meet in the function room at Barnes & Noble in Pittsford.
I would also say that if you end up joining a writers' group, it's certainly supportive, but it's not sort of blindly supportive, and I want to talk about the value of having a good editor and being open to having a good editor. Eric mentioned his wife. Is your wife a strong conscience of some of your writing at times?
Yes, absolutely. Now, she actually, not only does she just, listen to the things I write, but she also contributes. She comes up with ideas, a lot of feedback. And it's ultimately you are writing these things yourself, but you do have to submit them for critique. You do have to, bounce ideas off of other people, because ultimately you're writing it yourself, but you're writing it to share with others. And so, try to bring people in as early on the process as early as possible without, being too disruptive to the actual work.
Absolutely. Greg, what do you think? Is your husband, I know he's a martini maker, but is he an editor?
He does test my martini recipes.
Do you have someone who's a regular for you as a trusted sort of editor or writer's group, I guess?
It's the group.
The group?
It's those group. And I actually belong to two. So there's four of us in one and four of us in the other. But they're good friends. They're all good writers. So I look for people who I think are strong writers, and I value their feedback.
Even when it's tough love?
Especially when it's tough love. Because if everybody comes back every month and says, I love this, I love this, I love this, the work never grows creatively.
And Sandra, you've written books, articles, etc. The value of a strong editor is what, especially for somebody who really wants to be published?
It's huge. I have been writing all my life. I majored in journalism. This is how I make my living. In addition to teaching authors, I write nonfiction books and articles. And I still get edited, and I look at the edits to see what I can learn from them. And, sometimes you get a client who's just a knucklehead, and they make it worse. And, you shrug that off. But a lot of times you're fortunate to have a really good editor, and you can say, I consistently make that mistake. I'm going to learn from that. And from a publishing standpoint, it is essential that you have somebody other than yourself edit your work. I mean, I do that for sure. Every book I write goes to somebody else to be edited, because you can have like little ticks that you're not aware of that hurt your writing. You really need to have a professional editor, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. Your goal when you self-publish is to have a book that's as good as a book that is traditionally published. And most of us can't do that by ourselves, in the same way that at a publishing house, it's not one person who takes your manuscript and brings it to publication. It's a team of people. You need that team in one way or another when you're self-publishing too, so that you can produce a quality volume.
Eric?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, posting to the blog, I've had plenty of people who have, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, this is very funny, thank you for brightening my day. There have been times where people have been, dude, this really stinks. You know, you really need to think about how you wrote this, and you'll get some pretty instant feedback online real quick. And if you're lucky, and I have been, you'll have people who can, you know, give you some solid critique. And I've had one writer actually, we had a dispute to where I just disagreed. And they said, you can't, it was a story about Tarzan. And I'm sure if the person's listening, they know who they are. That essentially it ended up, if you think you could do a story better, go ahead and write one. And they contributed several times after that.
Were they good?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very good. Very good. So.
Well, Jake writes to the program, as far as testing the waters with self-publishing, even if you only sell 20 copies, do they get much reader feedback through, say, Kindle sales or Amazon? I would think the feedback of readers that pay would be pretty important.
Well, reader feedback can come to you in a number of ways. When you talk about it as a Kindle book, you can get reader feedback through they call them reader reviews. I think they're more comments, really, than reviews. But, you know, you can go to Amazon and rate a book with a number of stars, and you can get a lot of really helpful, honest feedback that way. And then, you know, Eric was just talking about his stories on his blog and how he gets that kind of a feedback. But the only way that if you're publishing and you are looking for reader feedback, there's also the Goodreads comments, but it really helps to send your book out to beta readers before it's published. And then after you've gone through that page or stage, go send it out to other people. Just give it to them free of charge and get their feedback that way. That can help you improve. But the one thing you have to do is you got to give books away.
Greg?
I had two things that struck me there. Number one, there are so many venues like Sandra was talking about. I was thinking of feedback comes not just through Amazon, but I have a Facebook page for my book. A young gay Catholic man in Massachusetts who I've never met has befriended me and talked about his own experience. So that's another way I got feedback and very gratifying to know that my message did what I had hoped it would do, which was share with other people. The other thought I had was... if you do choose to go the self-publishing route, so many companies now offer so many different services that you can pay for. You know, you can come in at the bottom level, or you can pay for a professional editing review, or you can pay for a Kirkus review, or you can. There's so many different services that are available. You have to be cautious that that a particular company is not preying on your vanity. That's the thing to look out for. But that having been said, you know, you can choose what you can kind of cherry pick what you want.
All right, now. Let's turn the discussion toward actually trying to get published. Do you need an agent these days, Sandra?
You really want an agent. Publishers would rather work with an agent than directly with the writer because the agent knows the business, the agent knows the language, the agent knows the terms of the contract, that sort of thing. Whereas a writer, especially a first-time author, it's a whole brave new world for them, and they just don't get it. So publishers really prefer to work with agents, and so I always recommend that people go that route, definitely.
That can be daunting. Gregory?
One of the things I tell my students, and this is something I heard and I pass it along, is to start on day one building a rejection file. If you do not have a rejection file that's at least an inch thick, you are not working hard enough to try to get published. You're not sending out enough stuff. Because for every one thing that you get published, whether it's a little story in a magazine or online somewhere or an actual book, there's probably 50 rejections that goes along with that. When I was trying to publish in Jupiter Shadow, I did try to get an agent, and I had some good connections, as I mentioned, with some big name agents in New York City who read it and respectfully declined it. So I ended up having about 70 rejection letters from agents before I decided I'm going to pursue a self-publishing route. I gave myself a year's time to try to work through that.
And again, you know, we've been sort of tempering expectations with a realistic view that there's very few Franzens out there who get, you know, who sell millions of copies. But at the same time, just about every one of them probably has a file if they've chosen to keep it, right?
I would absolutely believe so.
And those rejection letters for you, I'm sure they didn't say, you know, your work sucks. A lot of times what they say is, I really like your story, but I don't think I can sell it.
Yeah, it's not a fit.
That is exactly, I mean, in some cases it was, you know, exactly what you just said. Yeah. The market is saturated with gay Catholic memoirs
who
in
would
2008.
Have
yeah. yeah, who knew?
No, I don't say that flippantly. I'm sort of shocked to hear that.
Memoirs are hot, though. That's a hot category. So,
wow.
So it's
did that surprise you, Greg?
It didn't surprise me, but I was
being
just
a gay
hoping.
Catholic. You probably knew that there was gay Catholic writing out there.
Well, I kept running into them. You know, I felt the tension as I would walk into Barnes and Noble, and I'm like, I've got to get my book out. But it wasn't. So that part wasn't a big surprise. But I still had this hope or desire to try to be traditionally published, and it didn't work out. But I'm pleased with the results.
Absolutely. No, I understand. And Eric, when you look at the future, your own path. I mean, are you hesitant about the idea of an agent? And I only say there's something that feels like applying for college with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing that most people are going to reject you and tell you in some way. What do you make of the process?
I haven't got to the point where I'm thinking like, you know, I'm going to need an agent, because I still need the next book. So when it comes time, I'm not, you know, I work in advertising. I'm no stranger to rejection when it comes to you having an
right.
idea and something getting shot down, you know. So when I have the idea, I will probably then, not the idea, the actual story, the physical story, and, you know, it's been through so many revisions or whatever. Then I'll look to the next process, and if that's, you know, an agent, you know, so be it.
One of the mutual friends of the people on this panel is a former Rochester-based writer named Allie Larkin, who's now out on the West Coast, who's written some really, really good fiction, and it's been published. Her books Stay, Why Can't I Be You? And, you know, just in my conversations with Allie, we've had conversations about making sure you have good chemistry with people who are representing you. But, Sandra, you may, as a writer, you may feel, I can't afford to drop this agent because, you know, what if I can't get another? You do need good chemistry, don't you?
You do, but I will also say exactly what you've just said. Sometimes if you're lucky enough to get an agent, you know, grab it, use that person to help you kind of get your foot in the industry. And then from there, with your next book, start to be, it will be easier for you to find an agent that you have good chemistry with. And it used to be one of those situations where you picked an agent who was going to help shepherd your career and, you know, help shape the direction of what you wrote about next and that sort of thing. Those poor agents right now, because there are so few publishing contracts now, they are heading in a new direction. They're going into these self-publishing partnerships, and it's really less about shaping an author's career and more about all of us just kind of keeping our paychecks.
Well, I have a few minutes left, so I have to ask Greg about narrative nonfiction as well as a genre.
Right.
You've sort of now done it all, I guess.
I like to write in the nonfiction genre. So, and narrative is telling your own story or putting framing a story in a way that tells a tale, tells a story, tells a personal truth. And I was a big fan of this online journal, which was also a print journal, called Tiny Lights. And it was the very first place I was ever published, and it helped me start building my author's resume. And this year, I went for the annual February contest, and it wasn't up on the website. And I emailed the editor who I'd become friends with over the year and said, what's up? And she said she had been doing Tiny Lights for 20 years and that she was going to retire this year. So I had been directing students there. She was so encouraging to writers. She had a monthly prompt and a quarterly review and then an annual contest. And I just thought there was going to be such a void without that. So I wrote back to her and I said, you know, I've been thinking of launching a narrative nonfiction focused journal, online journal. And she said, it's a great idea. And P.S., if you decide to do it by this fall, I will promote you in my final mailing to my mailing list, which is huge. And I recognize that as a fantastic opportunity. So I came up with this summer the Big Brick Review. intended to encourage both established writers and emerging writers, and so that Rochester would not be without a writing contest in the middle of gray, cold February. I'm launching after my initial journal has launched in October. I'm kicking off a writing contest in February.
Okay, again, and how to get involved?
Just check out bigbrickreview.com, and all the instructions are out there, things to do.
Bigbrickreview.com. We have time for one quick phone call. Mary Jane in Webster. Go ahead, Mary Jane.
Oh, yes, I want to tell everyone what a wonderful experience that I had printing, having my own poetry printed rather than seeking out a publisher. They accepted it at the Rundle Library to put next to a book my husband had published when he was in the Marines. But I'm not a writer who sits down to write poetry any hour of the day. It's just when the muse comes upon me and I see something and I can't help but write about it. And I've used it for my family. I had it published, printed locally. I use it for my family as a Christmas gift some years ago, and also as gifts for others, and into the Webster Library and my Franklin High School Library. And it's been giving me much, much pleasure.
Well, Mary Jane, thanks for the call. It might not have made you rich, but 30 seconds, Eric Wilder, when you had I Humpty in your hand for the first time, did anything change for you? I don't mean like the world changed, but
right.
What was it like?
Just a great sense of accomplishment, you know, just something that I could take and share with others, and it's just fantastic.
Because, Greg, when you finally have that in your hand, then all of a sudden you say, what else is possible, right?
It does. It's like, what's next, and B, holy cow.
Sandra, where do people find Build Book Buzz?
Buildbookbuzz.com.
Simple as that.
Yeah, thank you.
Where do they find the Grim Report on Twitter? Where else do they find you, Eric Wilder?
You can go to grimreport.com. That's Grim with two M's. You see the blog. You can find my book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble website.
Gregory Girard?
I usually direct everybody to gregorygirard.net. That's my main website as an author, and it's got links to all my books and the Big Brick Review and things like that.
And Writers and Books and Rock Nano has been following the conversation. They say you can follow Rock Nano, R-O-C-N-A-N-O, on Facebook. Look for meetup groups there. Another group is the Rochester Speculative Literature Association at r-spec.org. So a lot of resources. Wonderful panel. Congratulations to everybody here, by the way, with all the success you've already had. Thanks for joining us. Great stuff today. And whether you're writing or reading or relaxing this afternoon, have a great day, and I'll see you tomorrow.